Oh, popped right up. Good job. All right, I'm going to do something quite a bit different now. This is not a typical type sermon. I'll kind of tell you the background behind this as we talk through this. As you know, a lot of times I receive personal correspondence letters, and I've received a lot of them in the last 6 or 8 months that talk about when does the Church of God teach that the 7-year tribulation will start. And you sometimes have to think about, well, you know, how am I going to answer this? Because the church does not believe there is a 7-year tribulation. We think there's a 3.5-year tribulation. So do you answer it, well, there's only a 3.5-year tribulation, and try and explain that? Or is that creating a problem that didn't need to be there? Doug Horchek used to tell us, don't break into jail when answering questions. You know, just explain when we think the tribulation is going to start or what to look for. But I got to thinking about it as I was answering some of these questions about where does the idea of a 7-year tribulation come from? And a lot of it comes from one of two interpretations of Daniel's 70 weeks prophecy. So what I thought I would do is go through this today. There is a lot of information in here that there's a wide range of interpretations. The church has one interpretation of this. And I will tell you in advance, this is something that we have held as our traditional view for a long time. It could be, as time goes on, that we'll learn differently, but at this point in time, what I'll do is discuss what the church's current teaching on this is, as well as some alternate viewpoints, and why some people come up with the idea that there is a 7-year period of tribulation. So we're going to go through Daniel 9 today, just a few verses, but those verses are packed with information. So what I want to do is give you the historical setting. Now, anytime that you go through chronology, there's a lot of dates, there's a lot of events, there's a lot of activities. Some people really eat that up. And for others, it's like watching paint dry. Now, I understand that this if you're the type of person that doesn't like dates and history and all that, this will be one of those sermons that you can sleep through if you want. No, I'm kidding. But the idea, again, behind this is, in order for us to understand the 70-week prophecy, we have to understand the dates. And so we'll go through dates and some of that chronology. We'll talk about what sparked Daniel to request something of God. It's very interesting when you think about what life is like today, and we're very much like this now. If something captures our interest, we often will kneel down in prayer and say, okay, God, I just started into this study and I don't understand it, so give me more understanding. And that's what happened to Daniel. In Daniel chapter 9, he's read something in the book of Jeremiah. It has sparked some questions, so he goes to God and says, hey, I need some help here. What's interesting is how God reacts to it. He sends Gabriel. Boy, wouldn't that be something if you would get down in prayer and say, please help me understand this problem, and all of a sudden an angel is sitting on the end of the bed going, here, I got an answer for you. That's exactly what happened to him. Then we want to look at what has already been fulfilled, because a good portion of the 70 weeks prophecy is already fulfilled. It's already happened in history. And then we get to the controversial part of what's left to be done. There's two major views of the end of the 70 weeks prophecy. The Church of God is not the only one that holds to our viewpoint, but there are really two different ideas behind the end of the 70 weeks prophecy. And I'll go through both of them just so you know. I think it's good for us to know both sides of that coin. And then it will be, as we end it, we'll talk about what the church's current belief is. I'll start by reading the passage. When I asked my wife, coming back from Laurel today, what worked and what didn't work, she told me that I was talking too fast. So I'm going to do my best to slow down. I do talk fast when I get excited. I really like this type of topic. So I like looking at dates. I like looking at things. So let's go in Daniel chapter 9. For the most part, I've got the scriptures on the screen. There are a few of them that I don't. But I wanted to read through this, and let's get an idea of the background or the historical setting of this. So here's Daniel, and he is speaking to us as he's writing this down in verse 20. He says, now while I was speaking and praying and confessing my sin and the sin of my people Israel, we'll discuss why he was doing that in just a moment. and presenting my supplication before the Eternal, my God, and for the holy mountain of my God. So he's praying, he's asking God to forgive him for his sins. He's asking God to forgive the nation of Judah for their sins. And he's praying for Jerusalem, for the Temple Mount. Verse 21, yes, while I was speaking in prayer, the man Gabriel, whom I had seen in a vision at the beginning, being caused to fly swiftly, reached me about the time of the evening offering. And he informed me, and he talked with me, and he said, O Daniel, I have now come forth to give you skill to understand. At the beginning of your supplication, the command went out, and I have come to tell you, for you are greatly beloved. Therefore, consider the matter and understand the vision. So, again, notice here, and it's very important to the story thread, Daniel is praying for his sins, for the sins of the people, and for the Temple Mount. Now, why would he be praying about that? Something had happened as Daniel was studying and praying that made him realize, you know what? Something is about to happen. There's a prophecy that Jeremiah gave, and I need to be asking God about it. So you may, again, be doing the same thing. You read something in the Bible, and you think, well, I wonder what this means. And you get on your knees, and you start imploring God to give you understanding. The interesting thing about it is, when Gabriel comes, not only does he answer the specific question that Daniel had, but he gives him a whole bunch of other things that Daniel didn't even ask about. Wouldn't that be cool if you were to go to God and say, hey, God, will you explain this one point? And then God comes and says, well, here's that one point, but let me give you a whole bunch of other things. Most of the time, it's the other way around. We go to him with all kinds of stuff, and maybe we get a short answer or a small answer back, and the rest of it, we just kind of have to wait and see what happens. But not only does Daniel get the information that he's looking for, he gets a whole lot more. And as a result of that, I think sometimes that has caused some little bit of confusion amongst people who read this. So what is it that Daniel was referring to? And why was he praying for the sins of the people and for the sins of Israel? Let's go back in Daniel 9 to verses 1 and 2, and we'll get the background of what Daniel was talking about. Daniel 9, verses 1 and 2. In the first year of Darius, the son of Ahasuerus, of the lineage of the Medes, who was made king over the realm of the Chaldeans, in the first year of his reign, I, Daniel, understood by the books the numbers of the years specified by the word of the Lord through Jeremiah the prophet. So what was Daniel doing? He was reading the book of Jeremiah. And in the book of Jeremiah, he saw that something would happen at the end of 70 years. So now he's trying to figure out what's going on. Why is he trying to figure out what's going on? We're going to see in just a moment that Daniel, I think, in studying, came to realize, oh, this 70 years is like right now. And he got excited about it. And we're going to see in just a second what it was that he saw. But there's enough ambiguity in the book of Jeremiah that he went to God and said, there's this prophecy back in the book of Jeremiah, and I'm not fully understanding it, so can you clear some things up for me? That was his request to God. Let's look and see what the specific issue was. This is from Jeremiah chapter 25, verses 11 and 12, and then I'm going to immediately skip to chapter 29, verse 10. I just kind of lumped this four or so chapters down into a couple of sentences. But this is what Daniel would have been reading. And this whole land, talking about Judea, shall be a desolation and an astonishment. And these nations shall serve the king of Babylon for 70 years. So something was going to happen to where Judea, and in fact, Damascus, Syria, Assyria, Egypt, they were all conquered by the Babylonian Empire. So it says here that this whole area would be a desolation and an astonishment, and that all of these nations, including Judea, would serve the king of Babylon for 70 years. Then it will come to pass, when the 70 years are completed, that I will punish the king of Babylon and that nation, the land of the Chaldeans, for their sin, says the Eternal. Now, dropping down to chapter 29, verse 10, for thus says the Lord, after 70 years are completed at Babylon, I will visit you, I will perform my good word toward you, and I will cause you to return. So Daniel knows after 70 years of being in captivity, Jeremiah says, we're going home. Now, how excited would that be? I was using the analogy this morning. Imagine if the United States gets conquered and all of a sudden we're in some place like Guantanamo Bay and there's some prophecy that comes along and says at the end of 70 years, you're going to get to go back home. That would have been a very, very exciting thing for Daniel to have recognized. Something else that isn't abundantly clear here, but I want to go back and because I still got it on the screen. It's the reason why I left this on the same screen. Look at what it says in Daniel 9. In the first year of Darius, the son of Ahasuerus, of the lineage of the Medes, who is made king over the realm of the Chaldeans. This was his first year. What does that mean? It means the Babylonians had just been conquered. Babylonians were just conquered. The Medes have taken over. Now go back down here again. For thus says the Lord, after 70 years are completed at Babylon, I will visit and perform the good work that I have caused you, and I will cause you to return to this place. At the end of 70 years, Babylon was supposed to be conquered. And guess what? Babylon had just got conquered. So Daniel's like going ding, 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 and he's starting to count. And he has his version of his iPad, you know, his abacus or whatever he used, and he's counting backwards, and he realizes Daniel was in the first wave of captives, and it was 68, 69, 70 years ago. So he's excited, and he's thinking, we're going home, and I'm excited about this. So he's, like I say, he's calculating, he's adding up, and he goes to God and says, okay, but we're still here. What gives? Help me understand this a little better. And that's what he's doing. So again, notice that we tie this to the desolation of Jerusalem. That'll become important as we go. But after 70 years in captivity, Judah, or the land of Judea, the Jews would be able to return. And Daniel starts to count. Interestingly enough, as excited, I think, as Daniel was about his people returning to Judah or to Judea, he never did. He stayed in the area. He served the king of Babylon until Babylon was defeated by the Medes and the Persians. And then he served Cyrus, and then he served Darius, and he served various kings after that. He actually stayed, and from what we understand through history, he died in the land of Babylon, having not gone back to Judea. But he still was excited about it. So as he's asking for better understanding, Gabriel comes and not only answers his question, but gives him even more information. Now, I want to read through this. There's a lot of reading here, and I know that. I want to read the whole section through first, and then I'm going to go back and take it piece by piece, and we'll digest this bit by bit, because there's a lot of information here. So here's what angel Gabriel has to say to Daniel. 70 weeks are determined for your people and for your holy city. Now, what was Daniel praying about? The sin of his people and the return to Jerusalem to fix the Temple Mount, to fix the walls of Jerusalem. 70 weeks are determined for your people and for your city to finish the transgression. That's one. To make an end of sins, to make reconciliation for iniquity, to bring everlasting righteousness, to seal up vision and prophecy, and to anoint the most holy. Six things. We're going to talk about all six of those as we go forward. If you have an old King James, it might say the holy place. That word place is not there in Hebrew. That's why New King James took it out. It just means to anoint the most holy, meaning the Messiah. Know therefore, verse 25, and understand, from the going forth of the decree or the command to restore and rebuild Jerusalem until Messiah the Prince, there will be 7 weeks and then 62 weeks. So in other words, if you add those together, in 69 weeks, 7 weeks plus 62, the Messiah is going to come. Can you imagine how exciting that would have been? There was a lot of prophecies about the return of the Messiah. You can read in Isaiah all kinds of things about there'll be this wonderful counselor and the mighty prince, and unto us a child is born, and you'll call his name Emmanuel. There's lots of prophecies about the coming of Messiah, but none of them say when. Now all of a sudden, Gabriel gives him a date. How cool is that? I mean, now he's starting to add forward. Oh, forget the 70 years in the past. I want to go, when's the Messiah going to come? And he's getting excited now, as I am, you can tell. To restore and rebuild Jerusalem until Messiah the Prince comes, there will be 7 weeks and then 62 weeks. The streets will be built again and the wall even in troublesome times. Now we'll come back and digest all of this. Let me keep reading. And after the 62 weeks, Messiah will be cut off. Another translation of this says that he will die. The Messiah will die. After 62 weeks, the Messiah will be cut off, but not for himself. It's not like he was, you know, he died because of something that he did wrong. And the people of the prince who is to come will destroy the city and the sanctuary. And the end of it shall be with the flood. Until the end of the war, desolations are determined. Verse 27, then he will confirm a covenant with many for 1 week, but in the middle of the week there will be an end to sacrifice and offering, and on the wing of abomination shall be one who makes desolate, even until the consummation which is determined is poured out on the desolate. Wow, that's just a whole lot of information there. And you can imagine from Daniel's perspective, sitting in captivity in Babylon, just asking the question, when do we get to go home? And all of a sudden he gets this flood of information looking forward. I'm just sure he was overwhelmed by it. And you know, as you keep reading through Daniel, by the time he gets to chapter 12, he's begging the angel to give him more information. And the angel says, that's all you get. And I just imagine the angel probably got irritated at him or tired of him asking questions. He said, look, this, we're done. I've given you, just write it down. They'll understand it later, right? So that's exactly what happened. So Daniel gets more than he even imagined. Gabriel now tells him when the Messiah will appear. Again, this is very complex. We're going to have to go through this one by one. You notice that I underlined here, from the going forth of the command to restore and rebuild Jerusalem. That's the marker. Whatever starts this 7 weeks plus 62 weeks, that's what starts it. So we've got to figure out when. So that's why we got to go through all these dates and decrees and all that to try and figure out when, because there's a bunch of things that happen here. So if we can figure that out, then we can count forward and figure out when the Messiah is supposed to appear. Now, first, Gabriel's going to help him understand Jeremiah's prophecy. So we're going to look backwards first, because that was, again, what Daniel was asking. So let's try and understand, first of all, the 70 weeks prophecy as it points toward when the Jews would be able to return back to the nation of Judea. So one of the things that Jeremiah was told in his prophecy was that all of the nations would serve Babylon for 70 years. So the question is, when did that 70 years start? Because there were several waves of captivity from nation to nation to nation. The first wave of captives from Judea occurred in 607 to 605 BC, and that was when Daniel was taken with his three friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Remember the story. They were in the first wave as teenagers. So they would have gone into Babylonian captivity somewhere between 607 and 605 BC. The last wave of captives occurred when Jerusalem was destroyed between 586 and 585 BC. So somewhere between 607, you either go back to the 607 or 606 date, or you go forward to the 585. Somewhere in there is when this clock starts. So we've got to figure out when the clock starts. Let's go to Ezra chapter 1. And this one I do not have on a slide, so we'll just go back and read this. Ezra chapter 1. And I actually want to start in verse 1. And I'll just read this straight from the Bible without it being on a slide. Ezra chapter 1 and verse 1. Now in the first year of Cyrus, king of Persia, who was Cyrus? He was the one that defeated the Babylonians. This is right at the end when Babylon gets destroyed. Now in the first year of Cyrus, king of Persia, the word of the Eternal by the mouth of Jeremiah should be fulfilled. The Eternal stirred up the spirit of Cyrus, king of Persia, so that he made a proclamation throughout all his kingdom, and he also put it in writing, saying, thus says Cyrus, king of Persia. Now I'll drop down to verse 3. Who is among you of all his people? May his God be with him, and let him go back to Jerusalem, which is in Judea, and build the house of the Lord God of Israel, for he is God, which is in Jerusalem. And whoever is left in any place where he dwells, let the men of his place help him with silver and gold and livestock and freewill offerings to fix the house of God, which is in Jerusalem. Interesting to note that one of the very first things that Cyrus, king of Persia, does is he allows the captives to go back home. We know from history that this edict from Cyrus, as I've got on the slide up there, occurred in 538 BC. So The first wave starts to leave at 607 to 606 BC. The last wave is 586 to 585 BC. And 30, 40 years after the last wave is gone, Cyrus says in 538, you can start going back. So, interesting, again, I will just say this again, one of the very first things that Cyrus does is he allows the Jews to start returning. So we've got the serving in Babylon for 70 years, and if Cyrus allowed them to start going back sometime after 538, now we can use that as an end date and count backwards. When he came to power in 538, it took a year or two for him to get things organized for them to go back. History would tell us that the Jews started to return in 536 BC. So again, if you count backwards 70 years, you go back to the time when Daniel went into captivity. From the first start of captivity, from 606 BC, if you add 70 years, you get 536, the year that Cyrus lets the captives start to go back. So this is one of the answers to Daniel's prophecy. Daniel knew that he was in the first wave, and perhaps what Daniel was asking was, does the 70 years start when I was taken, or does the 70 years start when the last group was taken? The angel then helps him to understand, no, this goes all the way back to when you were taken. The 70 years concludes with the destruction of Babylon. Would have been good news to Daniel. For those of us that have thought that Christ was going to return in 1975, only to find out that it wasn't then, wouldn't it have been nice if it actually had? Well, of course, a lot of you wouldn't have been born, so that wouldn't have helped you out any, would it? All right, now let's look at a second fulfillment of this, because there actually was something else. There was another 70-year period that occurred here. From the time that the Temple Mount was destroyed, so that would have been at the end of the last captivity. The Temple Mount was sacked and destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar's army in 586 to 585 BC. But we know that in 538, Cyrus said, you can go back and start rebuilding. But do you remember the story? And I didn't put it in here just for the sake of time. Remember it said that they went back to start building the temple, and then the people that were in the land, the Samaritans, the Canaanites, Sanballat, they started bothering them, and they started writing decrees back to Cyrus and back to Darius saying, these people they're going to rebel against you, and so they'd stop. And then another letter would say, no, go ahead and start again. So they'd start, and then this stopped and started for decades. It took them a long time to be able to finish this. So even though they were allowed to go back in 536 BC after Cyrus's decree, history again would show us that they were not able to finish the temple and restore it until 515. So again, if you do the math, 585 plus 70 years is 515 BC, the date when the temple gets rededicated. Now, up to this point, the city of Jerusalem is still in ruins. All they did was they repaired the temple and the wall around the temple, or the Temple Mount. For those of you that have been at the Temple Mount, you know what I'm talking about. That the parapet that went around it, the walls that were on the side, that was refixed, and then they got the temple back into service again. I just want to read this from Expositor's Bible. This isn't something that comes out of Church of God literature. This is widely believed by almost everybody. There are very few people out there that think that this part of the fulfillment of the 70-year prophecy is any different from the Expositor's Bible commentary on the book of Daniel. Note that it is important to keep these stages of the captivity in mind when computing the 70 years of exile announced by Jeremiah. The interval between the first deportation in 605, in which Daniel himself was involved, and in 536, when the first returnees under Zerubbabel once more set up an altar in Jerusalem, amounted to 70 years. Likewise, the interval between the destruction of the temple and the completion of the second temple in 516 was another space of about 70 years. So again, this is agreed by us and by anybody else that looks at the 70 years prophecy. Looking backwards at Jeremiah's prophecy, that there obviously were two fulfillments of this, the restoring of the temple, but also allowing the Jews to be able to return home. So far, we're good. Everybody has the same point of view. But now we're going to go forward into Gabriel's prophecy, and this is where it gets interesting, because what we have is a series of things that Gabriel says that I'm sure was puzzling to Daniel. Bless Daniel, he just simply wrote down what he heard as he was instructed to do. And we're very glad that he did, because we've got a lot of really interesting things here. Daniel, again, would have lived all 70 years in captivity. He saw the fall of Babylon. He saw the rise of Cyrus and Darius. He saw the Jews being able to return and rebuild. And now we're going to look forward at Gabriel's prophecy. Let's go back again and read Daniel chapter 9. And let's read in verse 25. I told you we would go back and take each of these one at a time. Daniel chapter 9. And let's start in verse 25. So here's the first part of the prophecy. Know therefore and understand that from the going forth of the command to restore and rebuild Jerusalem until Messiah the Prince would be 7 weeks plus 62 weeks. So a total of 69 weeks. We'll talk about that in a minute. But again, it says from the command to rebuild Jerusalem was Cyrus's command to rebuild Jerusalem. It wasn't. It was to rebuild the temple. Now, what we need to do is we need to try and figure out, okay, so what decree are we talking about from the decree to rebuild Jerusalem? I've got all four of them up there. If you're a date hound, you can write them down and look them up later. But there were four decrees. 538 BC, Cyrus says, guys, I want you to go back and I want you to rebuild your temple. A few years later, 18 years later, in 520 BC, Darius issues a second decree. Remember, they were suffering through the Samaritans trying to stop them. And then Darius issues one and says, get out of their way and let them finish this work. So there was actually a second decree from Darius. You can find that in Ezra chapter 6. Later on in Ezra chapter 7, we see that a new king comes to the throne, Artaxerxes, and he makes a decree in 457 that says, and I'm summarizing here, go back and finish whatever temple work you've got to do, and then if you've got any money left over, start fixing Jerusalem. And then there's one in 444 that Artaxerxes says, you're not doing this fast enough, guys. Go get the city and rebuild it. So you got four decrees. Which one is the one that would have started this period? Obviously, that would need to be known. If you got the starting point, you can count forward and figure out what year we could expect the Messiah. So which decree starts the count? The first two are specifically to rebuild the temple, but Jerusalem laid in ruins after those first two edicts. So because it says the command to restore and rebuild Jerusalem, and not the temple, we would discount those. Both decrees by Artaxerxes mention Jerusalem as well as temple work. And so it's logical for us to use 457 BC as in Ezra 7 as the starting point for this count. Now, how do you count? What's 7 weeks and then 62 weeks? Why is there two different time periods? Numbers chapter 14 and verse 34. You don't have to turn there, but I'll read it for you. This is the day for a year principle. Most commentators will tell you the same thing, that when Daniel was referring to weeks, he meant something different, and I'll explain that in just a minute. But let me just read Numbers chapter 14, verse 34. According to the number of the days in which you spied out the land 40 days, for each day you shall bear 1 year of guilt, namely 40 years, and you will know my rejection. This day for a year principle is also repeated in Ezekiel chapter 4 and verse 6, where a day for a year principle is used. So often when you see in prophecy where something took 1,260 days, it meant 1,260 prophetic years. How do we figure that out? Let me just show you a couple things here that maybe you haven't seen before. The Hebrew language is very, very different than English. They actually don't have a word for week. The Hebrew language doesn't have, like we have the word week, meaning 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks. They don't have that. When it says in Daniel chapter 9, 7 weeks, it actually means seven sevens, or seven times seven. When it says 62 weeks, that word weeks again means sevens. 62 sevens. So it's a mathematical equation. It would be very similar to, and I should have looked this word up, I think that if you have a singing group that has seven people, is that a septet? Does that sound right? That's more of the word. The word is like a septet. There are 62 septets. There are 62 groups of seven. It doesn't say weeks. It just says seven sevens or 62 sevens. But again, applying the day for year principle, it was obvious that what Daniel would be talking about was the this opportunity of having seven sevens and then 62 sevens and then a final 1 week of seven, which would be a total of 490 years. Let's actually count that out now. Also, let's go back to Daniel 9 and verse 24. I want to back up a verse because this is going to be important to understand why we feel one way, but other people that read this feel differently. Notice what it says. 70 weeks are determined for your people in your holy city. What at the end of that 70 weeks should happen? There are six things listed. Finish the transgression, make an end of sin, make an atonement for iniquity, bring in everlasting righteousness, seal up the vision and prophecy, and anoint the most holy. What do all six of those have to deal with? They have to deal with the Messiah. When the Messiah came and he died, he finished the transgressions of the people. He made an end of sin. He made an atonement for iniquity. He was the propitiation for our sins. We also know when he returns, the Messiah will bring everlasting righteousness. It says that he will seal up the vision and prophecy. Remember, it says even in the New Testament, prophecy will fail. Prophecies will be fulfilled. Sometimes we don't think about that. We from where we are, we're always looking forward to prophecy. But there's going to come a time when all of the prophecies of the Bible are fulfilled. They'll be done. That's why Paul said prophecies, the gift of prophecy isn't that great of a gift, because one of these days those prophecies will all be fulfilled, and then what job are you going to have? There are no more prophecies to be. They're done. It's much better to have another gift like being filled with Holy Righteous Spirit, the things that will last for eternity. So all the visions will be finished. That's something else that the Messiah will do. And then the very last thing, the Messiah would actually be anointed. That hasn't happened yet. He hasn't come back to this earth. He hasn't been anointed King of Kings and Lord of Lords. We read about that in Revelation chapter 19. There's going to come a time when he comes back and he's actually given that crown. But he doesn't have it yet. But notice that all six of these things for the 70 weeks prophecy point toward the Messiah and not toward an Antichrist. The reason why I mention Antichrist now, you're going to see it in just a little while. There's a difference of opinion of what the end of the 70 weeks prophecy is about. There's one group that thinks it's about the Antichrist. There's another group that thinks it's about the Messiah. And we'll read about that in just a moment. So let's go look at all of these. Daniel chapter 9, verse 25 starts the first one. Know therefore and understand, from the going forth of the command to restore and build Jerusalem until the prince, there will be 7 weeks and 62 weeks. So what were the two things that were mentioned? Restoring Jerusalem, 7 weeks. Messiah coming, an additional 62. So in essence, what this is saying, this Hebrew construct is the restoration of Jerusalem will take seven sevens, or 49 years, and the coming of the Messiah would then be an additional 62 sevens, or another 434 years. You'll see the math here in just a minute. Don't glaze over. We'll get there. So in other words, what he's saying is you're going to have the Jews are going to return, and you're going to rebuild the temple. You're going to rebuild Jerusalem. And the first part of this, the rebuilding of Jerusalem, is going to take 7 times 7, or 49 years. So you can see I've got it up here from 457 B.C., when the decree from Artaxerxes goes out. If you add 49 years to that, it brings you up to 408 B.C., and 408 B.C., historically, is when the town or city of Jerusalem was finally finished. The walls were fixed up. The Temple Mount had already been fixed. The wall around the Temple Mount was fixed, but now we're talking about the wall around the city. That took a long time. Those of you that have been to Jerusalem, you know what wall I'm talking about. It goes through all those gates, the Damascus Gate and all the gates that go around that. When that was knocked down, that took a long time for them to fix back. So that was fulfilled, as is prophesied by Gabriel. From the time of the decree until Jerusalem was once again restored and the wall was finished, that occurred in 408 B.C. So the first part of this, the first seven sevens, was taken care of. Now let's go on to the next one, verse 26. After 62 weeks, Messiah will be cut off, but not for himself. So from, we have seven sevens, it takes us to 408 BC. Now we're told that another 62 sevens will bring us to Messiah. Interestingly enough, if you start at 407 and add another 434 years, which is 62 times 7, you come up to 27 AD. No year zero. What happened in 27 AD? Jesus Christ started his ministry, the coming of the Messiah. So to the very year that Gabriel prophesied, from the decree of Artaxerxes in 457, 49 years later, Jerusalem would be restored, and then 434 years after that, the Messiah would come. Right on the nose. We know that Christ was born in 4 BC, and according to Luke chapter 3, verse 23, I won't bother to read that now, but it says, being about 30 years of age, he started his ministry. So from 4 BC, again, no year zero, 30 years into the future, 27 AD, Messiah comes. So thinking about from Gabriel's prophecy, it's amazing, isn't it? From the issue of the decree to rebuild Jerusalem until the Messiah comes would be a total of 69 sevens. Now, this is a 70-week prophecy, and we're only talking about 69 of them. There's still another one to come. But the coming of Messiah occurred right at 27 AD, just like it was supposed to. But notice what else it says in here. It says, after the 62 weeks, Messiah would be cut off. This term cut off in other translations actually says put to death. So we know after Messiah came, you know, I think from the perspective of what most Jewish people would look at, they thought that when the Messiah came, that he would just take over and it would be all done there. But according to Gabriel's prophecy, that when the Messiah would come in 27 AD, somewhere after 27 AD, he would be cut off. And it will actually describe how long in just a moment. So after 62 weeks, Messiah gets cut off. Now let's go to verse 27. Then he will confirm a covenant with many for 1 week. So here's the 70th week. But in the middle of the week, he will bring an end to sacrifice and offering. Now here's the question. Who is this talking about? Who is the he in this verse? We'll talk about that in the next slide. Our church teaching is, and I'll just mention it here, and then we'll talk about it all the way through, that in this final week, it says the Messiah would confirm a covenant with his people. We know that Jesus Christ brought the new covenant and that he established it with those people who were called at that time. He even talked about it, that he was the one that brought his death, brought in or ushered in the new covenant, the forgiveness of sins and this new agreement. But it also says in here, and again, I'm reading it again, he will confirm a covenant for 1 week, but in the middle of the week, sacrifices would stop. What happened 3.5 years into Christ's ministry? He died, just like it said he would. He would be cut off in the middle of the week. All right, now we've got a 7-year period we've got to work with. 3.5 years into it, halfway into it, the Messiah is cut off. And it says that he would cause there to be an end to sacrifices. Was that true? Absolutely true. When he died, there was no more need for animal sacrifices. There was no more need for a Levitical priesthood anymore. He came and in the order of Melchizedek, there was no need for the Levites. There was no need for animal sacrifices. So we would read verse 27 as this is referring, at least the first part of this, to the work that Jesus Christ did for that first 3.5 years of his ministry. Also of note, not only was he crucified 3.5 years into his ministry, but what day of the week was he crucified? He was crucified on a Wednesday, which was in the middle of the week. So he was truly cut off in the middle of the week. All right, let's go forward and let's talk about who he is. And this is where it gets different. Now there are two points of view on who verse 27 is talking about. For many commentators, they believe that the he in verse 27 is the Antichrist. And there's good reason for why they would say that. Have any of you either read the book or saw the movie Left Behind by Timothy Leahy? Or so is it Timothy or Tom. Leahy is right, but I may have the first name wrong. Anyway, he goes by this. He thinks that this verse, and I'll read it from his perspective, is talking about the Antichrist. Now, if you saw the movie or read the book, the Antichrist is this smooth-talking, glib guy that comes along, smartly dressed, and he makes an agreement with Israel and brings peace to the world, but he secretly is undermining things, and somewhere in the middle of this agreement that he makes, he pulls out of his agreement and causes the world to plunge in to even further into a tribulation. According to Timothy Leahy's view, the rapture would have occurred prior to this. So all the good people are gone, and now we have this seven-year period that's ruled by the Antichrist. So from that perspective, let me read it. I'm going to take the word he out and put Antichrist in there, and you can see where he gets this. Verse 27, then the Antichrist will confirm a covenant with many for 1 week, meaning the nation of Israel. But in the middle of the week, he will bring an end to sacrifice and offering. You know, it's like he's peace, but there is no peace, and then he pulls the plug, and all of a sudden he's revealed as this real bad guy. And on the wing of abominations shall one who makes desolate until the consummation which is determined, and it's poured out on the desolate or on the desolator until this guy is finally taken out. So for those that read that this he is the Antichrist, they see there is an Antichrist that will make a peace treaty with Israel for 7 years, break the treaty halfway through, cut off the daily sacrifices, which we know are going to start. You read about that in Daniel 12 and in 2 Thessalonians 2. We know it's going to happen. So with that reasoning then, the tribulation is a seven-year period. Again, from the perspective of Timothy Leahy and others, the rapture would occur, and then after the Christians are gone, there's 7 years of tribulation until Christ finally occurs. That's one of the reasons why people will write in and ask me, when do you think the seven-year tribulation is going to start? They're going back to this prophecy and trying to when's this date? Very similar to what Daniel was saying. You know, when are we going home? People want to know when they're going home. When are we going to be taken up into the clouds? So to many commentators, verse 27 is talking about the Antichrist. But now let's read it from a different perspective. There are other commentators, many, not just, again, the Church of God, many people would look at verse 27 and say that the he is Jesus Christ, and that is our belief. So let me read this from that perspective. Then Jesus Christ, will confirm a covenant with many for 1 week. When he came, he brought the new covenant, and that new covenant is effective for those people that are called and chosen now. But not everybody's called and chosen now. When he returns, he will confirm the rest of the new covenant with the rest of humanity. Satan will be removed, and Jesus Christ will rule during the millennium. Christ will confirm a covenant with many for 1 week. But in the middle of the week, he will bring an end to sacrifice and offering. In the middle of his coming to earth in 27 AD, by 31 AD on Passover, he was cut off. And because he was cut off, he brought an end to sacrifice and offering. So again, the church would take this to mean that he was here for 3.5 years and was cut off. So obviously, if this is a 7 year period, there's still 3.5 years left. So when Christ returns, there's still work to be done. You know, it talks about people hiding in the caves and the rocks. We're going to have to go find them and bring them out. There's work that's going to need to be done. So the church's view would be, when he comes back, he finishes the last of his week, because he didn't finish it all because he was cut off in the middle of the week. So you can see the two points of view. If it's the Antichrist, there's a seven-year tribulation. If it's talking about Jesus Christ, he's already fulfilled 3.5 years of it, and there's 3.5 years yet to come when he returns. So those are the two points of view. Here's another reason why we would think that verse 27 is entirely referring to the Messiah, or at least this first part of 27. You remember those six things that I mentioned that the prophecy, the 7 weeks prophecy would be about? All of those things deal with the Messiah, bringing an end to sin, finishing transgression, making atonement for sin, bringing in everlasting righteousness, fulfilling all of the prophecies, and finally the Most Holy being anointed. You remember when I did the thing on the throne of David, where, and I speculated that there would come a time after Jesus Christ returns that whoever is sitting on that throne right now would cede the crown, and it would be placed on the head of Jesus Christ, perhaps at the end of this 70 weeks prophecy when he receives the final crown. He will, the most holy will be anointed. So we would look at the events of the 70 weeks prophecy and say that it points to the Messiah and not solely to an Antichrist. All right, just a couple of more thoughts here, and then we'll end. There will be a shorter presentation today, but filled with a lot of dates, so it's probably a good thing that it was a little shorter. Now let's look at the second half of verse 27. Because there is a bad guy that gets introduced here. And on the wings of abomination will be one who makes desolate. Again, we would say that this was not the he in the start of verse 27. The he would refer to Christ. But there is going to be someone who causes abominations. On the wing of abominations will be one who makes desolate, even until the consumption which is determined is poured out on the desolator. In other words, Jesus Christ is going to come back and fulfill his work, but there also is going to be a bad guy that's there at the same time. This spirit of Antichrist that will be there. So when we look through this again, I think that you can see that there will be a ruler that's mentioned here. There will be someone who will bring an abomination of desolations. There was a forerunner of it in 70 AD when the temple was destroyed. That would have been Titus. You remember what Antiochus Epiphanes did, where he put swine's blood in the temple back in the days of the Maccabees. Something like that's going to happen again. We know that's true. Daniel chapter 12, 2 Thessalonians 2 tell us that there's going to come a time when Jerusalem is going to be devastated by an antichrist, by an evil person, and that man will stop the sacrifices that will have begun in Jerusalem. The church would look at, you can look at verse 25, 26, and 27, and the Hebrew construct is the first part of the verse talks about the Messiah, second part of the verse talks about the evil that will be going on at the time Messiah is doing his work. And all of those verses do the same thing. We think verse 27 does that as well. The second half of the last week, with the understanding that Christ has already fulfilled the first half of the final week, then by default, there needs to be another 3.5 year period after his return to finish the job of instituting the new covenant. Finish. He's already started it. Was cut off in the middle of the week. So we would say the church's teaching, and many other people's teaching, by the way, is that when Christ returns, there will be another 3.5 years of work to be done. Now, to be fair, as we talk about this, this is from our Life, Hope, and Truth article on the 70 weeks of Daniel. I want to read this. It says, thus it is clear that the work of the Messiah that was to be accomplished in the 70th week has not yet been completed. That's the official church view. As noted earlier, the first three of those six items listed in verse 24 were accomplished at the end of the 70 weeks of Daniel, have been partially completed when Jesus Christ came the first time. But the last three still remain. In other words, the Holy One hasn't been anointed yet. All will be completed and fulfilled in the future when the Messiah finishes the last half of the 70th week. All right, just to bring this to a conclusion, there are obviously two views of the 70 weeks prophecy in Daniel. To be fair, there is no scriptural reference anywhere in the Bible that says that when Christ comes back, he will continue for 3.5 years and finish his work. It doesn't say that. That is a conjecture that the church has come up with based on the fact that we believe that the first half of the 70th week was the 3.5 years that Christ was on earth. By extension, there needs to be another 3.5 years to fulfill that. But to be fair, that isn't registered in the Bible that way. Okay? Nor is there any reference in Scripture to an Antichrist making a 7-year treaty with Israel that gets broken in the middle. It's just as much conjecture on one side as the other. There is an Antichrist. There is a desolation that's coming. But there's nothing in anywhere else in Scripture that says that it'll last for 7 years and that he's going to make a peace treaty with Israel. It's just simply not there. Both views have their supporters. The Church of God, because of the events listed in Gabriel that point to the work of the Messiah, we therefore look at a 3.5 year period while on earth and a 3.5 year period when he returns to finish the 70 weeks prophecy. So that's it. Thought I would just give that to you. It perhaps will help you understand better why there are people that believe in a seven-year tribulation. And I understand it from the perspective of someone looking at that verse 27 and saying this has got to refer to the Antichrist. Well, then it would appear that 70th week, 69 weeks were fulfilled by the Messiah, but the 70th week is going to be something the Antichrist does. To us, that just doesn't make sense. The whole prophecy needs to be about the work of Messiah. Hopefully that was somewhat interesting to you for all those date lovers. You loved it. For those that didn't, it's time to wake up and sing a hymn. Again, a very different sermon than I typically give, but one that I thought would be of interest to you.